Introduction. We set out to investigate a computer underground that is the real-life version of cyberpunk, science fiction that blends high technology with outlaw culture. In cyberpunk novels, high-tech rebels live in a dystopian future, a world dominated by technology and beset by urban decay and overpopulation. It's a world defined by infinitely powerful computers and vast computer networks that create alternate universes filled with electronic demons. Interlopers travel through these computer-generated landscapes. Some of them make their living buying, selling, and stealing information, the currency of a computerized future. The television character Max Headroom, who lived in a network of mass media popping up in computers and television sets everywhere, was considered pure cyberpunk. So was the 1982 movie Blade Runner, which portrays a slick, dark, and dangerous world in which technology has triumphed and life is grim. The inspiration for this book came when we began to see a change in the way computers were being used. We found harbingers of cyberpunk, young people for whom computers and computer networks are an obsession, and who have carried their obsession beyond what computer professionals consider ethical and lawmakers consider acceptable. They were called hackers. As the public viewed them, these computer hackers posed a sinister, if also somewhat vague, threat. This is our attempt to explain who they are and what drives them. This book tells three stories. Kevin Mitnick fit the public perception of an archetypal, dark side computer hacker. He was thought to be able to manipulate credit ratings, tap telephones, and take complete control of distant computers. He saw himself as a brilliant computer renegade, and he proved to be a formidable adversary for one of the world's leading computer makers. In the end, he was trapped by his own arrogance and compulsion. The computer culture of the 1980s was as global as the youth culture of the 1960s. A young West Berliner who called himself Pengo discovered computers in his early teens. Because his parents had no understanding of the electronic world he had entered, no one knew that he was doing anything wrong when he spent hours at a time in front of a computer screen. To play out his outlaw fantasies, Pengo joined a group that sold the fruits of its wanderings through international computer networks to the Soviets. Eventually, Pengo and his gang were torn apart in a series of betrayals. Kevin and Pengo represent something close to the cyberpunk idea of the computer cowboy who lives outside the law. Robert Tappan Morris was different. The young Cornell University graduate student became notorious when he wrote a program that brought down a nationwide computer network. The son of a leading computer security researcher, he grew up as the ultimate insider, a member of an insular and elite community of computer scientists. Shy and thoughtful, Robert was hardly a rebel. By releasing a program that crippled several thousand computers in a matter of hours, he permanently altered the course of his life and confirmed everyone's worst fears about what hackers could do. The event marked a turning point. The private world of computer networks was suddenly of concern to the general public. More than stories about computers or technology, this book is about the social consequences of computer networks and the communities that have grown up around them. As the world's computer networks became more closely linked in the 1980s, it was suddenly possible for anyone to travel the electronic corridors that were once the preserve of a small group of researchers. All three young men were seduced by the thrill of exploring these international computer networks, but they all went too far. Each drew national attention and contributed to a growing sense of public unease about the risks that arise from society's increasing dependence on computer networks. In the 1960s and 70s, to be a computer hacker was to wear a badge of honor. It singled one out as an intellectually restless soul compelled to stay awake for 40 hours at a stretch in order to refine a program until it could be refined no more. It signified a dedication to computers that was construed as fanatical by outsiders, but was a matter of course to the hackers themselves. The hackers from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology in particular adhered to what has been called the hacker ethic, which Stephen Levy described in his 1984 book, Hackers, as a code of conduct that championed the free sharing of information and demanded that hackers never harm the data they found. Hacking also meant anything either particularly clever or particularly wacky, with or without a computer, as long as the manipulation of a complex system was involved. Some hacks are legendary. There was the computer program that determined the minimum amount of time it took to cover the entire New York City subway system. After the program was written, a bunch of MIT hackers actually went to New York and tried it out. And there was the legendary hoax during the 1961 Rose Bowl game between Washington and Minnesota when Caltech students made substitutions for the letters on the cards to be held up by the Washington Huskies fans at halftime. Instead of Washington, the cards spelled out Caltech. A palindromic music composition was considered a good hack, thus making Haydn, with his palindrome symphony, an honorary hacker. So was anything done to establish not merely a new record, but a new category altogether in the Guinness Book of World Records. In the 1980s, a new generation appropriated the word hacker, and with help from the press, used it to define itself as password pirates and electronic burglars. With that, the public's perception of hackers changed. Hackers were no longer seen as benign explorers, but malicious intruders. These hackers are significant because of what our fear of them says about our unease with new technologies. Arthur C. Clarke once said, "Any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic." For many in this country, hackers have become the new magicians. They have mastered the machines that control modern life. This is a time of transition, a time when young people are comfortable with new technology that intimidates their elders. It's not surprising that parents, federal investigators, prosecutors, and judges often panic when confronted with something they believe is too complicated to understand. The fallout from this fear is already apparent. As we were finishing the book, something of a hacker hysteria was sweeping the nation. After a 2-year combined federal and state investigation in the spring and summer of 1990, more than 30 raids on young computer users took place across the country, followed by a second wave of searches and arrests a few months later. In an attempt to root out the high-tech tools being used by this new breed of criminal, law enforcement agents confiscated computers, modems, answering machines, telephones, fax machines, and even stereo equipment. Federal agents have gone after computer hackers in 1990 as if they are the next scourge after communism. Do young people who illegally enter computers really represent such a menace? We hope that from reading the following stories, readers will learn that the answer isn't a simple one. All three of the young men we write about were caught up in what society views as criminal activities, yet none saw himself as a criminal. Each felt he was an explorer in a remarkable electronic world where the rules aren't clear, and each paid a price for his actions. It is possible that once computer networks become as commonplace as our national highway system, we will learn to treat them in much the same way. Rules of the road will emerge, and people will learn to respect them for their own safety and for the common good. We hope that the stories of Kevin Mitnick, Pengo, and Robert Morris illustrate not just the risks of computer networks, but also their allure.